Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much for having me today. Again, David Weindorf from Texas Tech. I'm the professor of pedology there. And prior to that, I was on the faculty at LSU, so I've kind of had experience with some of these more coastal soils and then now arid soils out in West Texas. And as Craig mentioned, Christine and I got together and we kind of decided that we would split Texas in half. And the easiest way people split Texas in half is I-35, typically. We're talking west of I-35 versus east of I-35. So I'm only going to be focused on stuff to the west, which, as you mentioned, was probably a better fit for last year's conference since it was, you know, arid and semi-arid stuff out there. But we'll show you a little bit about the state, and then Christine will follow on with the discussion of the Gulf Coast stuff. So just to kind of give you an idea of some of the natural regions of Texas, you know, one of the really remarkable parts about Texas is we do have such a great diversity. You have everything from the piney woods over in East Texas all the way through Central Texas, very thin soils, you know, with mollisols on top of them. Then you get out into the high plains of West Texas where I'm at. It's all Aeolian material out there, great agronomic land, you know, for growing cotton and corn and other types of crops. Far West Texas, you know, out into the El Paso region, you know, you're looking at the desert out there, basically. It's really low precipitation, and so we do see a lot of variability across the state. Just to give you some quick idea of the geology of Texas, you know, we have all kinds of different stuff here. We've got Cretaceous limestone throughout much of the central part of the state. And you notice that little purple dot right there, that's kind of a granitic batholith that comes up, and we have a couple of towns actually named after that, Granite Shoals and Marble Falls and things like that, representing some of those igneous intrusive elements. And then out in West Texas, you know, we're looking at Pliocene, you know, type Aeolian deposits, and then again in far West Texas, you get into some much more arid type of materials. If you look at the precipitation map going east to west, again in far east Texas, you're looking at something up around 60 inches of rainfall a year, and as you move progressively west, it gets drier and drier. As you go across our state, if you go on Interstate 10 or Interstate 20, those actually kind of converge out in far west Texas, you really get to see this. You start out in the forests of east Texas, and then you get to kind of mesquite kind of territory out past Dallas, Fort Worth, into the Cross Timbers area, and then finally you get out towards Abilene, Midland, those areas, and it really starts to get dry. And so it's really interesting to see that progression going east to west. So just as a kind of general overview of the mineralogy of Central and West Texas, for most of our lands, you'll find a large number of them. When you look up the official series description, those areas are going to be denoted as mixed mineralogy. So we may have some isolated pockets here and there where we have a defined mineralogical class, but most of it just goes as mixed. And we do have small areas of smectitic, carbonatic, hypergypsic type mineralogy. Our smectitic soils in far west Texas are mostly associated with playas, which are the shallow depressions, you know, that we find in the high plains where the water tends to run to when we get these convective thunderstorms. A large part of central Texas is Cretaceous limestone, marl. You see a lot of that from Austin down to San Antonio, up towards Waco, even into the Dallas area. The high plains, again, dominated by these Pliocene Aeolian deposits, our prevailing winds come out of the south. And so we see a general gradation of texture from coarser textured soils to the south and finer textured soils to the north. And that also has important implications when we talk about agricultural production. Farther to the south, you'll see peanuts grown in that very sandy soil. In the Lubbock area, we're the largest cotton-producing patch in the United States. And then farther to the north, up towards Amarillo, you'll get more corn production as you get more mollisols in that area where you have increased moisture held in those soils. Permian deposits, typically sandstone. We have some pockets of gypsum. In fact, in Sweetwater, you know, the name kind of represents the town there. U.S. Gypsum and some of the other gypsum-producing companies are actually located there, and they have active mining operations where they produce sheetrock and those types of materials. And I talked about the small area in central Texas with the granitic batholith. Far west Texas is quaternary deposits, some of those being of igneous origin. So what I'm going to do for my presentation is just walk you around the state, Central and West Texas, and show you some of our unique and more extensive soil series, both in photos and block diagrams. And the first of those is the Pullman series. And you see it occupies a large area of the high plains north of Lubbock. It's a fine-mixed, superactive, thermic, toroidic paleostal. And so we do get enough organic matter in these soils to have that mollic epipedon. It's on 3.1 million acres, so that's larger than the state of Connecticut. and really puts things in perspective out there. Clay Aeolian deposit. This is a benchmark soil that was established in 1929, and the progression of horizons here is commonly a clay loam surface as an AP, grading into more clay subsoils, a BT and or a BTK. This is what you would see, you know, where you would find the Pullman on the landscape with respect to some of these Randall deposits that typically have PEP soils around them. Again, typically we have the Blackwater Draw and the Ogallala formations underneath that, but Pullman is just extensive across the north central plains there north of Lubbock, between Lubbock and Amarillo. Very deep well-drained soils, very low slopes in there. Precipitation here is around 19 inches, and what you're going to find, I'm going to show you in just a few moments here, the depth where we start to get the calcic horizon forming in our soils is totally dependent upon precipitation. So if you move farther to the west and things get drier, you're going to find that calcic horizon much shallower to the surface. As you move farther to the east, things get deeper because you have more precipitation. The Amarillo series is another one that is mapped extensively out in the high plains, and this is around the Lubbock area. I've done a lot of work in the Amarillo series, actually. So it's fine loamy mixed, superactive thermic aridic paleostalf. Again, loamy Aeolian deposits established in Randall County in 1920. Some of those deposits that you saw on the previous map are not actually correct. There are in the northern portions of New Mexico, the Canadian River Valley, the wrong parent material is there, which would kick it out of the Amarillo series. And in southern New Mexico, there's actually a drier moisture regime. So there's a few areas that are mismapped that are going to have to be cleaned up. But that's kind of what the profile looks like. So just to give you some idea of what these deposits look like, again, it's very flat up there on the high plains, and we've got those Blackwater Draw and Ogallala sediments underlying that. I want to point out again the Randall clay here, some saline lakes and playas that we have across the surface. I'm going to talk about those momentarily. We have both strong argillic and calcic horizons in the Amarillo series, really well-defined calcics. We're going to talk about that here in just a second. So these are the different developmental stages of those calcics, and it goes everything from stage 1 and 2. We start to get few threads, masses, those kinds of things, to where we get into a BKK horizon in stage 3, then we start to get an indurated laminar cap at stage 4. You see some pistolith formation in stage 4 and 5, and finally a fracturing of these plates because you get such a huge amount of calcium carbonate at stage 6. And so these are the kinds of things we commonly describe in West Texas. And just to kind of show you a little bit of what some of this looks like, this would be a stage 4 petrocalcic near Lubbock, Texas, and these nodules that you see all over the place, those are called pistoliths, and they are these, you know, kind of coatings of calcium carbonate that build up there. I mentioned the depth of carbonate precipitation, again, being dependent upon where we are, west to east, ustic and aridic versus eutic farther over into the eastern portion of the plains. This is just another photo of these calcium carbonate laminar coatings here. Here was a solid aggregate. You can actually see the coatings here that separated off the edge of this. So we use that term laminar coating. It really is like just applying coat after coat of paint, you know, one after the other, and it forms these thick rinds that you can see actually forming on top of the soil surface. So I also mentioned some of those saline lakes that we have out there. This is Frost Lake. And here you see Juan Herrero and Abdo Aldaba and I going out to take a look at one of these. It looks like it's snow on the ground there, but that's actually all salt. And so this is extensive halite and gypsum. We published a paper a few years ago on hypersaline playas of the high plains. And in a 1-5 dilution, the salinity here can easily exceed 50 decisiemens per meter. So this is just showing you a little bit of the mineralogy. I had to put in at least one X-ray pattern here to show you guys some stuff. We have some gypsum and halite identified in here, and again, for this particular sample, that EC of the 1-5 dilution was 37 decisiemens per meter. It was 26% sulfur, which is a good indication of the contribution of gypsum in the patterns. Then we also have lots of non-saline playas, and these again are essentially the low spots on the landscape where the water runs following a heavy rain. We typically see smectitic mineralogy here. Gilgai is common in virgin playas that have never been plowed. They have differential water holding capacity, that is to say some of them dry out completely in the summer, some of them have water all year round. A lot of that is based on the catchment size that that area collects water from. Some of them are very small, some of them are really extensive. Of course, you would find slick insides in this, extensive cracking, There's been a lot of debate over the years. Should we consider these as jurisdictional wetlands? Mm-hmm. There's certainly the soils evidence to support that. We see the redox features in here, the depleted matrix, I mean, all the indicators of that stuff. But these playa lakes like this form a really important habitat for migratory waterfowl. So we get these Canadian geese coming down out of Canada every year, and these birds just descend upon the high plains by the thousands, and they'll spend all winter there. Okay. It's just from the Guy Smith slide collection, just an idea of concept of some of our vertisols. Christine's going to talk a lot more about this, but you see the slick insides, you know, deep underneath the cracking zones, and they've got some really excellent studies that have been done down in the Gulf Coast region that she's going to talk about, but it gives you some idea of how these things form and look morphologically. Well, the Miles series is another one that we kind of have a running joke about. This is kind of just off the eastern edge of the Caprock, and we always say the Miles series just extends for miles and miles. It seems to be mapped everywhere out there. It's kind of in the Permian country. It's a fine loamy mixed superactive thermic, typic paleostyle for around 1.5 million acres. Loamy alluvium is the parent material. This is an old series established in 1913 by the Reconnaissance Soil Survey of South Central Texas. Commonly a fine sandy loam surface grading into a sandy clay loam, BT or BTK, subsoil. So here you see that kind of sand sheet forming over this outwash material, very deep, well-drained, moderately permeable soils. Notice a little bit more moisture here, 23 inches, because we're starting to get off the cap rock and head a little bit farther east, okay? But also on fairly flat lands. And we have the Cobb series, and I wanted to throw this in because it's a little bit different. Fine loamy mixed active thermic typic haplostyle, it's down in the rolling red plains. And so we see a lot of this kind of substrate material underneath, established in 1935, 193,000 acres. Fine sandy loam over a sandy clay loam over weakly cemented sandstone. And this has a little different, you know, expression than what we see up on the high plains with this sandstone underneath. So it's a well-drained soil, moderately permeable, again, formed in this residuum from sandstone. A little bit more relief here on the landscape as we look at that compared to the high plains, up to 8% slopes, and notice the precipitation is now up to 25 inches. So by the time we get to that I-35 corridor, we're going to be at about 35 inches. The Voca series is just to the west of Austin, and the reason I include this is it's part of that granitic batholith that comes up. So it's fine, mixed, active, thermic, typic paleostyle in the Texas Central Basin, slope alluvium and residuum from Precambrian grus and granite. It's only of moderate extent, 95,000 acres roughly, but I wanted to just show this because it is a little bit different than what we typically see in Central Texas. So you see this series, you know, kind of in these slope wash areas, a couple of A horizons, maybe a few moderately developed BT horizons, and then grading into the material beneath that. The Lone Oak series, again, kind of in that western corridor. If you go Austin to San Antonio and then head a little bit farther to the west, you'll find this clay mixed active thermic arenic paleostyle, and you can see this sand sheet clearly over the top here. Residuum derived from this Precambrian or Cambrian age sandstone, again in the Central Texas Basin, moderate extent here, but you've got some pretty good coloration there in the subsoil. There you see the Lone Oak series again, kind of on these foot slope positions, back slope positions, in country in Central Texas where we're starting to get much more topographic relief, and you see the sandstone underlying those areas. And again, the sandstone is different for Central Texas because most of that area is all going to be the Cretaceous limestone. So to have the sandstone pockets of this is a bit different. Now the Tarrant series is one that is extensively mapped. Of course, you see that farther out west from San Antonio. It's a clay skeletal smectitic thermic lithic calciestol. And in teaching pedology at Texas Tech, I'm sure Christine talks about this as well, this is not the prototypical mollisol. You know, when we teach the concept of mollisols, we think, oh, these deep, dark soils, lots of corn being grown on those in, you know, Kansas or something. And Mickey's chuckling back there. I mean, he understands what I'm talking about. These barely make the definition, you know, and it says in soil taxonomy, if you've got, 15 centimeters or 20 centimeters over a lithic contact, 10, you can get by, then you've got enough for a mollic epipedon, and sure enough, that's what we have. And these are extensively mapped throughout Central Texas. So 3.2 million acres roughly, established in 1947. We've got this as residuum derived from limestone, including interbedded chalk and marl. And
this, how many bushels per acre?
Oh, I couldn't tell you that. I don't know. Amanda Bragg took this photo. And again, Edwards Plateau is extensive throughout Central Texas. So here you see, you know, the Tarrant and kind of the upland position of these. These are going to be in summits, shoulder type positions, you know, grading into the back slope as well. But it is something that is extensively seen and limits the agricultural productivity of those regions from an agronomic standpoint. A lot of this area would be cattle country. You know, they're grazing animals on this. The Pedernales series. Now, so many times people see this and they want to say Pedernales, like the river, but it's actually not Pedernales. It's Pedernales, okay? And this is a fine, mixed, active, thermic, typic paleostyle, calcareous, loamy materials, clay slope, alluvium over residuum, in the rolling limestone prairie. This was established in 1913 in Gillespie County, 317,000 acres of this soil. You see in regards to where the Tarrant was, they use the same block diagram. The Tarrant is going to be higher up in those positions, where the Pedernales is a little bit lower position there and also is underlain by that sand as opposed to the limestone marl. But these can occur, you know, in kind of this intergrade between the two throughout extensive areas in Central Texas. Now we move over into far west Texas along the Rio Grande Valley. This is the Black Gap series. And it's a real thin one, right? If you're a soils judger, this is one you'd like to judge because there wouldn't be much to look at. It's loamy skeletal carbonatic hyperthermic lithic ustic haplocalcid in the southern Edwards Plateau. Of course, we have residuum, pretty obvious there, and then colluvium derived from these thick-bedded limestone deposits. The depth here to the limestone bedrock can vary between 6 to 20 inches, but you know, you just have 6 inches there, it's pretty shallow, all right? But it's fairly extensive, 339,000 acres in the state. And you see a lot of this in you know, these kind of upland positions relative to some of the other drainages that you might experience. This is kind of interesting also. The Black Gap series, the OSD is mapped as an AK horizon over an R. And not too many people describe AK horizons. And so, you know, we typically think about the K representing the accumulation of calcium carbonate, right? It's not just the presence, but rather the accumulation of calcium carbonate. So oftentimes, when we see Ks associated with A horizons, what it means is that water is coming up from beneath the soil through capillary action, and that water is evaporating, and it's leaving those carbonates at the surface. So they actually are moving in the profile, and they are being deposited, but they're being deposited at the surface rather than deeper down in the profile. So it's kind of almost counterintuitive to think about it that way, but that's what we see in these areas. The Mariscal series is also down around the same part of the country. Loamy skeletal carbonatic hyperthermic lithic ustic toriorthent. It's down in Trans-Pecos. You see these kind of flaggy limestone pieces here, which you can see the very flat pieces in there interbedded with chalk and marl. Fairly new series, established in 1980. 160,000 acres, so not very extensive. You'll see this in some different terrace positions here as it relates to that limestone underneath. And again, same sort of thing here. A BK horizon, a very thin one, and then an RK horizon. And you think, well, how can you have an RK if it's a lithic contact, if it's bedrock? How are you getting carbonates there? But in this part of Central Texas, we actually see secondary carbonates coating pieces of flags of limestone underneath. So you have both primary and secondary there that need to be described. The Chillicothe series is out in far west Texas, just to the east of El Paso. It's a loamy, skeletal, mixed, superactive, thermic, ustic, haplocalcid. It's in the West Texas Basin and Range. A large part of the Big Bend National Park is mapped as Chillicothe. And it's loamy, gravelly, Piedmont sediments from igneous mountains. Rock fragment content here can go all the way up to 90%. So there's not much fine earth present in a lot of these. Okay. 500,000 acres of this. So Lynn Loomis and his group working out in Marfa, I think, have described a lot of these kinds of soils. Here's kind of a block diagram of that. You can see where these are on the landscape, kind of down almost in that fan alluvium position, coming down out of the mountains. And we do get some pretty tall mountains in far west Texas. But they're dry mountains, you know, for the most part. Just a ABW here, and then a series of BK horizons, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So just enough moisture here to translocate some carbonates within the profile, but it's kind of interesting how that plays out. And then the Elcor series, this one is a really interesting one. I had an opportunity to work in this one with Juan Herrero and B.L. Allen years ago. This is a fine gypseous, hypergypsic, thermic lithic haplogypsit. I don't know how many times we could work a gyp into the classification there, but you get the idea. There's a lot of gypsum here, right? It's in the southern desertic basins, plains, and mountains. Gypseous residuum here. This was established in 2012. There's really a couple of different expressions of this. You can get shallow soil over rock gypsum, or you can also get deeper, non-indurated, finely disseminated soil, almost like a white powder. So really different expressions of this depending on which areas you go. The area around Pecos, Texas has a lot of these gypsic soils, and often in my Soils and Crops of Arid Lands class, we take a field tour and we go through Carlsbad Caverns and then swing back over towards Pecos and look at the gypsic soils and the lag gravels left at the surface and things like that. This gypsiferous loam is on a 1 to 8% slope. You'll notice the vegetative productivity here is dramatically curtailed by these types of soils. You get yucca, soap tree, little leaf sumac, creosote bush, those kinds of things surviving in this. But it's on the Gyp Hill ecological site, desert grassland vegetative zone. And just to give you some idea, this is kind of what a pit looks like when you dig this. It's really challenging to work in these soils because, believe it or not, when you go and you look at a profile here, there's a lot of variability within the profile, but it just all looks like white powder. I mean, you really can't tell, is that 50% gypsum and that 60%? You know, if you were in any other soil and you found 10% calcium carbonate in another horizon that didn't have 10%, you could easily tell the difference, right? Well, this is 96% gypsum here and roughly 4% calcium carbonate. And this is in Culberson County, and Kelly Atterbury shared this photo. I should also acknowledge Kelly as well. Kelly Atterbury is my co-author in this presentation, and he's on the soil survey staff in Lubbock, and we spent quite a number of years out in the field working together on things. So with that, I will just conclude by saying the mineralogy of soils in Central and West Texas are highly variable. Mixed mineralogy is common, but we also have site-specific mineralogical classes found in certain areas. Annual precipitation is a big driver on why we see different expressions of soils, different taxonomic classifications there. It plays a key role in subsurface horizon development, whether it's the movement of gypsum or calcium carbonate, all those developmental stages that we were talking about. And again, the dry areas of West Texas are also differentially influenced by various salts, and that sometimes constrains agronomic production in the area. You have to be careful that your area doesn't salt out, so to speak. If you're using kind of a brackish irrigation water source, that can be something that's a concern that you have to constantly monitor. So with that, I'll wrap up and just ask if you have any questions or comments.
Time for one or two questions.
Yep.
Was one of the alpha salts in the panhandle what they call the eroded phase?
We certainly get some of that. What is so critical on the high plains is it's a 3-3 versus a 3-4 color chips I'm talking about, okay? It's that close. And if it makes it a 3-3, it'll be a mollus. You know, you have a mollic, you have a mollusol there, right? If it goes 3-4, you're going to have an ochric epipeton, and it's going to be an alpha sol. But the development of the profile, the argillic horizon, and the calcic is very similar between the two. It all comes down to that surface color, and what drives that is organic carbon. Out in West Texas, the nickname for the high plains is the Llano Estacado. And the story is when the Spanish explorers were out there, the grass was so tall that they had to put these big poles up as they went across the high plains literally to find their way back out. It was like leaving a trail of breadcrumbs. So when that was native grassland, there was a tremendous amount of organic matter out there, right? But now you're hard-pressed in West Texas to find any rangeland. It has all been broken out into cropland, and as that's happened over the last 40 years, they've just continually farmed it, the level of organic matter in the soil has gone down. And as that organic matter is decreased, we get a little bit lighter color, and that often makes the epipeton ochric instead of mollic. So it's a difficult call to make in the field. If I take students to my soil pits at the Texas Tech Farm, and I asked them to describe the upper horizons. Half of the class will call it Okrik, half will call it Moloch. It's just that close. So, yeah. Okay.
One more question.
Yep.
This last series, they showed this accumulation of chips. Why is it occurred there?
I don't have a good rationale or explanation for that. I know that the Pecos River, you know, comes through eastern New Mexico, and that sediment, you know, has to be coming down there somewhere. But where the original source of that comes from, that's a good question. I don't know the answer on that. Kelly Atterbury would know the answer to that probably. But anyway, thank you guys.
Thanks, Dave. Mm-hmm.